Escuelas Oficiales de Idiomas de Andalucía. Comprensión oral. Inglés. Nivel avanzado C1. Tarea 1. Dispone de 2 minutos para leer las instrucciones y el contenido de la tarea.
Extract 0.
Yes.
What's that?
When she like yells at me for doing something wrong.
Really?
Yes.
How does she yell at you?
Like in anger, really hard.
How does that make you feel?
Sad.
Extract 1.
I like to play soccer because it's competitive and it's fun, and also because the team about it, like how it's all a team, and like everyone has a job, like midfielders and defenders and forwards, and like it's a team effort. Like you rely on everybody else. They don't rely on one person. If they did, then you probably wouldn't do that good, or they'd have to be really good.
Extract 2.
I think it's important to cheer on the whole team, not just your particular daughter or son. I think it's important that you don't single out a particular player, you reinforce the whole team, and I think it motivates them.
Extract 3.
Oh, it just brings the whole momentum of the game down. The girls don't get anything out of that. Typically, it distracts them from the game. They'll actually even stop to listen or look what's going on the sideline, which obviously can impact the game.
Extract 4.
Some of the things that the parents say I really don't like they'll like say stuff to the other team, especially the other team, because last week they were like being mean to our players, calling our players names, unnecessary things and stuff, and their children were doing it.
Extract 5.
To let the kids have fun. You know, I want the parents to enjoy it, but they got to understand it is a game for the kids. It's basically for them. It's not win-win-win. It's skill building. It's making it enjoyable for them to play and have fun.
Extract 6.
On the way home, if I really did, if we lost, I would like to hear how well I did, how well my sister did, and just how well the team did. So, like, in soccer practice, if the coaches aren't saying something about it, then I just, like, tell them, like, what they're doing wrong. Because we really communicate that way. Like, if somebody's doing something wrong, we'll, like, try to be nice about it and say it. And we'll, like, correct the problem and hopefully win next game.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Escuche de nuevo la grabación.
Extract 0.
Yes.
What's that?
When she, like, yells at me for doing something wrong.
Really?
Yes.
How does she yell at you?
Like, in anger, really hard.
How does that make you feel?
Sad.
Extract 1.
I like to play soccer because it's competitive and it's fun, and also because the team about it, like how it's all a team, and like everyone has a job, like midfielders and defenders and forwards, and like it's a team effort. Like you rely on everybody else. They don't rely on one person. If they did, then you probably wouldn't do that good, or they'd have to be really good.
Extract 2.
I think it's important to cheer on the whole team, not just your particular daughter or son. I think it's important that you don't single out a particular player. You reinforce the whole team, and I think it motivates them.
Extract 3.
Oh, it just brings the whole momentum of the game down. The girls don't get anything out of that. Typically, it distracts them from the game. They'll actually even stop to listen or look what's going on the sideline, which obviously can impact the game.
Extract 4.
Some of the things that the parents say I really don't like they'll like say stuff to the other team, especially the other team, because last week they were like being mean to our players, calling our players names, unnecessary things and stuff, and their children were doing it.
Extract 5.
To let the kids have fun. You know, I want the parents to enjoy it, but they got to understand it is a game for the kids. It's basically for them. It's not win-win-win. It's skill building. It's making it enjoyable for them to play and have fun.
Extract 6.
On the way home, if I really did, if we lost, I would like to hear how well I did, how well my sister did, and just how well the team did. So, like, in soccer practice, if the coaches aren't saying something about it, then I just, like, tell them, like, what they're doing wrong. Because we really communicate that way. Like, if somebody's doing something wrong, we'll, like, try to be nice about it and say it. And we'll, like, correct the problem and hopefully win next game.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Este es el final de la tarea 1. Tarea 2. Dispone de 2 minutos para leer las instrucciones y el contenido de la tarea.
Extract 0.
With a promising new drug on the horizon, we hear what it's like to care for loved ones, including parents, who gradually lose their memory and their speech because of the disease. According to the World Health Organization, around 55 million people across the world currently have dementia. That number is expected to triple by 2050. The disease has a huge impact on family. It's important to add that scientists say that the best way to maintain brain health is to reduce the risk factors for dementia. They include hypertension, smoking, diabetes, and obesity.
Extract 1.
It's called lecanemab, and it was part of a US trial of around 1,800 people in the early stages of the disease. Fair to say, it's caused quite a stir. Those taking the drug over an 18-month period showed a 27% slower rate of decline than others in the trial. Now, that number in itself might sound pretty modest, but in practical terms, it is a huge improvement on what scientists have achieved so far. We brought together researchers to get their opinion.
I've been researching new treatments for Alzheimer's disease for most of my career, and I've grown tired of seeing attempt after attempt come up with a blank.
Extract 2.
I get the sense that scientists aren't easily excited, so when you are, the rest of us should really pay attention.
I think what's really exciting when you get positive findings like this is it also just highlights why research is important and hopefully will help other people feel more kind of excited to engage in research, because we couldn't do it without people with lived experience being willing to get involved.
Extract 3.
Yeah, we are excited from a scientific perspective, but there is quite a lot of caution around that excitement. I mean, number one is going to be access to this therapy in the future, because, you know, this is probably going to be useful for a very small number of all the people who have, you know, dementia or mild cognitive impairment, certainly in the UK, but even more so in, dare say, low and middle income countries, where therapies like this are going to be very hard to access. So I think we have to be aware this is a global condition, and this treatment may not be that accessible for large parts of the world.
I think it's important to think of this advance in a context, and that is that we learn a lot from mistakes, we learn a lot from early experiments and the small results. There's still a lot of work and a lot of opportunity to improve this type of medicine. So although very few people may get access to lecanemab itself, I hope that what will occur downstream will be new versions of this type of drug that are safer, perhaps a little bit more effective, and that we also learn how to be able to administer these drugs to people earlier and earlier in the course of their disease so that they have the maximum time.
Extract 4.
I'd add there as well, I suppose, about the kind of targeting people earlier and earlier is that by having hopefully breakthroughs like this, it will also help people come forward for earlier diagnosis. So we know that getting a diagnosis of Alzheimer's or other types of dementia can be beneficial to get as early as possible. But there is a lot of reluctance to seek a diagnosis a lot of the time for lots of different reasons, and some reluctance to give a diagnosis. So I think when we look at possible treatment options that would benefit people earlier on, we've got that motivation to encourage people to look at early diagnosis.
And I should add that the new drug is expected to receive conditional approval for wider use in early 2023 and then full approval later in the year, including for other countries.
Extract 5.
What I sort of regret not having done, or my family having done, is get to know the stories and the past and the family history. So I think for me the drug is about giving more time, not just to be, but also to learn about family history and, you know, have those cross-generational relationships.
One of the things with someone who has Alzheimer's, for the loved ones, there's a long grieving process. And anyone who's experienced grief, which is pretty much everybody in the world, we know that there's a lot of what-ifs. And a lot of my what-ifs for my mom are, you know, she wanted to always visit Italy, or visit Wales, where her family was from. And we never got that opportunity for her to travel. And in early stage, you know, those things were still very much possible. And I think if we would have had more time, maybe we could have made some of those really big wishes happen.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Escuche de nuevo la grabación.
Extract 0.
With a promising new drug on the horizon, we hear what it's like to care for loved ones, including parents, who gradually lose their memory and their speech because of the disease. According to the World Health Organization, around 55 million people across the world currently have dementia. That number is expected to triple by 2050. The disease has a huge impact on family. It's important to add that scientists say that the best way to maintain brain health is to reduce the risk factors for dementia. They include hypertension, smoking, diabetes, and obesity.
Extract 1.
It's called lecanemab, and it was part of a US trial of around 1,800 people in the early stages of the disease. Fair to say, it's caused quite a stir. Those taking the drug over an 18-month period showed a 27% slower rate of decline than others in the trial. Now, that number in itself might sound pretty modest, but in practical terms, it is a huge improvement on what scientists have achieved so far. We brought together researchers to get their opinion.
I've been researching new treatments for Alzheimer's disease for most of my career, and I've grown tired of seeing attempt after attempt come up with a blank.
Extract 2.
I get the sense that scientists aren't easily excited, so when you are, the rest of us should really pay attention.
I think what's really exciting when you get positive findings like this is it also just highlights why research is important, and hopefully will help other people feel more kind of excited to engage in research, because we couldn't do it without people with lived experience being willing to get involved.
Extract 3.
Yeah, we are excited from a scientific perspective, but there is quite a lot of caution around that excitement. I mean, number one is going to be access to this therapy in the future, because, you know, this is probably going to be useful for a very small number of all the people who have, you know, dementia or mild cognitive impairment, certainly in the UK, but even more so in, dare say, low and middle income countries, where therapies like this are going to be very hard to access. So I think we have to be aware this is a global condition, and this treatment may not be that accessible for large parts of the world.
I think it's important to think of this advance in a context, and that is that we learn a lot from mistakes, we learn a lot from early experiments and the small results. There's still a lot of work and a lot of opportunity to improve this type of medicine. So although very few people may get access to lecanemab itself, I hope that what will occur downstream will be new versions of this type of drug that are safer, perhaps a little bit more effective, and that we also learn how to be able to administer these drugs to people earlier and earlier in the course of their disease so that they have the maximum time.
Extract 4.
I'd add there as well, I suppose, about the kind of targeting people earlier and earlier, is that by having hopefully breakthroughs like this, it will also help people come forward for earlier diagnosis. So we know that getting a diagnosis of Alzheimer's or other types of dementia can be beneficial to get as early as possible. But there is a lot of reluctance to seek a diagnosis a lot of the time for lots of different reasons, and some reluctance to give a diagnosis. So I think when we look at possible treatment options that would benefit people earlier on, we've got that motivation to encourage people to look at early diagnosis.
And I should add that the new drug is expected to receive conditional approval for wider use in early 2023, and then full approval later in the year, including for other countries.
Extract 5. What I sort of regret not having done, or my family having done, is get to know the stories and the past and the family history. So I think for me the drug is about giving more time, not just to be, but also to learn about family history and, you know, have those cross-generational relationships.
One of the things with someone who has Alzheimer's, for the loved ones, there's a long grieving process. And anyone who's experienced grief, which is pretty much everybody in the world, we know that there's a lot of what ifs. And a lot of my what ifs for my mom are, you know, she wanted to always visit Italy or visit Wales, where her family was from. And we never got that opportunity for her to travel. And in early stage, you know, those things were still very much possible. And I think if we would have had more time, maybe we could have made some of those really big wishes happen.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Este es el final de la tarea 2. Tarea 3. Dispone de 2 minutos para leer las instrucciones y el contenido de la tarea.
South Africans began immigrating to New Zealand in numbers in the mid-1990s. While the journey is much easier today than when Europeans first arrived by boat in the 19th century, simply fitting in presents a much bigger problem.
One thing I do miss is
the shoes, because the shoes are crap here. Sorry, but they are.
Listening to this, you'd imagine the great trek from South Africa and setting up a new life in beautiful New Zealand is little more than a frivolous adventure. But as South African expat Rake Hutting tells us, that's not the case.
I couldn't find any work. Applied for probably 60, 70 jobs. I got one interview. It didn't go too badly. They said, hey, they'll call me back, and I'm still waiting for the call, you know. So I realized that, no, I have to make my own plan.
Playwright and former journalist with Freya Wiekblad and Losleif magazine, Hutting luckily didn't have to wait for that call. He stumbled on the opportunity to start his own business and almost overnight started repairing shoes and cutting keys.
Trying to make a foreign country home can have some dramatic consequences. The South African divorce rate among immigrants to New Zealand is high. Loneliness is a factor, and breadwinners often have to resort to some unusual and difficult things to survive.
Carol Venicourt used to work as a caterer in South Africa, but to do similar work here in New Zealand, cooking food to sell from home, by law, Carol has to build a separate kitchen. With her husband out of work, she doesn't have spare cash to undertake such a task, so she sells at markets. But the markets just don't provide enough. So Carol made a plan.
I decided to go and earn some money, and I went bus driving. Now, I know everybody thinks this is very strange, a baker in a bus. I saw the advert in the local little rag we had here, and I saw bus drivers wanted, no experience necessary, all training given, and I thought, that's me.
A professional woman driving a public bus, something you wouldn't quite see in South Africa. And while Carol finds satisfaction in meeting her new challenges, other immigrants find comfort in their togetherness. The South African shop serves as a hub for Auckland South Africans. Another point of contact is Jan Kutsia, a name familiar to many expats for his radio show on Auckland's Planet FM. While his marriage didn't survive, his skills as a business consultant have allowed him to observe South Africans at work in the local community.
Most South Africans are pretty assertive in their employment relationships. That sort of attitude doesn't seem to work here. You've got to be far more user-friendly than what we are used to in South Africa.
Auckland hairdresser Michael Gullery was a law student when he protested against the infamous Springbok rugby tour of 1981. While he describes his South African clients as good people, he questions the South African willingness to integrate into New Zealand society.
They tend to cluster together. So you get these sort of little districts like Torbay, Browns Bay on the North Shore, in Auckland, where there's a lot of South Africans that live in this little group. So you find that the shopkeepers are all South African. The teachers in the schools are all South African. In most New Zealand streets, you will walk down the street and you look at that house as a Maori, that house as a white New Zealander, that house as a Samoan, over there is Chinese, there's Indians, and we all live together mixed up on the streets.
After 12 years in the country, Rake says South Africans can be misunderstood.
South Africans come across as being arrogant. And being a South African, you know that they're not. They're just loud and, you know, whereas New Zealand is quite subdued.
Yes, we both speak English and play rugby, but New Zealand is in fact a very different culture, and South Africans struggle to adapt. Jan Kutsia gave us an example on his favourite morning walk.
I got out of a South African shop. There were three rather bulky South Africans standing on the sidewalk, dressed in typical safari suits. They were standing there and in Afrikaans discussing some of the darker-skinned local inhabitants, making very crude and rude remarks. Realized that I couldn't leave it, turned around and spoke to them in Mooi Afrikaans and reminded them that that wasn't the typical way of treating people who inhabit the country in which you are a guest.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Escuche de nuevo la grabación.
South Africans began immigrating to New Zealand in numbers in the mid-1990s. While the journey is much easier today than when Europeans first arrived by boat in the 19th century, simply fitting in presents a much bigger problem.
One thing I do miss is
the shoes, because the shoes are crap here. Sorry, but they are.
Listening to this, you'd imagine the great trek from South Africa and setting up a new life in beautiful New Zealand is little more than a frivolous adventure. But as South African expat Rake Hutting tells us, that's not the case.
I couldn't find any work. Applied for probably 60, 70 jobs. I got one interview. It didn't go too badly. They said, hey, they'll call me back, and I'm still waiting for the call, you know. So I realized that, no, I have to make my own plan.
Playwright and former journalist with Freya Weekblad and Losleaf magazine, Hutting luckily didn't have to wait for that call. He stumbled on the opportunity to start his own business and almost overnight started repairing shoes and cutting keys.
Trying to make a foreign country home can have some dramatic consequences. The South African divorce rate among immigrants to New Zealand is high. Loneliness is a factor, and breadwinners often have to resort to some unusual and difficult things to survive.
Carol Venicourt used to work as a caterer in South Africa, but to do similar work here in New Zealand, cooking food to sell from home, by law, Carol has to build a separate kitchen. With her husband out of work, she doesn't have spare cash to undertake such a task, so she sells at markets. But the markets just don't provide enough. So Carol made a plan.
I decided to go and earn some money, and I went bus driving. Now, I know everybody thinks this is very strange, a baker in a bus. I saw the advert in the local little rag we had here, and I saw bus drivers wanted, no experience necessary, all training given, and I thought, that's me.
A professional woman driving a public bus, something you wouldn't quite see in South Africa. And while Carol finds satisfaction in meeting her new challenges, other immigrants find comfort in their togetherness. The South African shop serves as a hub for Auckland South Africans. Another point of contact is Jan Kutsia, a name familiar to many expats for his radio show on Auckland's Planet FM. While his marriage didn't survive, his skills as a business consultant have allowed him to observe South Africans at work in the local community.
Most South Africans are pretty assertive in their employment relationships. That sort of attitude doesn't seem to work here. You've got to be far more user-friendly than what we are used to in South Africa.
Auckland hairdresser Michael Gallery was a law student when he protested against the infamous Springbok rugby tour of 1981. While he describes his South African clients as good people, he questions the South African willingness to integrate into New Zealand society.
They tend to cluster together. So you get these sort of little districts, like Torbay, Browns Bay on the North Shore, in Auckland, where there's a lot of South Africans that live in this little group. So you find that the shopkeepers are all South African. The teachers in the schools are all South African. In most New Zealand streets, you will walk down the street and you look at that house as a Māori, that house as a white New Zealander, that house as a Samoan, over there is Chinese, there's Indians, and we all live together mixed up on the streets.
After 12 years in the country, Rake says South Africans can be misunderstood.
South Africans come across as being arrogant. And being a South African, you know that they're not. They're just loud and, you know, whereas New Zealand is quite subdued.
Yes, we both speak English and play rugby, but New Zealand is in fact a very different culture, and South Africans struggle to adapt. Jan Kutsia gave us an example on his favourite morning walk.
I got out of a South African shop. There were three rather bulky South Africans standing on the sidewalk, dressed in typical safari suits. They were standing there, and in Afrikaans, discussing some of the darker-skinned local inhabitants, making very crude and rude remarks. I realized that I couldn't leave it, turned around and spoke to them in Mooi Afrikaans, and reminded them that that wasn't the typical way of treating people who inhabit the country in which you are a guest.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Este es el final de la tarea 3. Aquí acaba la prueba de comprensión oral. Por favor, siga las instrucciones del profesorado en su aula.